Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board again. I am sitting at the moment on my deck overlooking my beautiful dam. We have a lovely little breeze here. And I have the most amazing man trapped on my veranda with me. He's a gentleman who, goodness me, I've known for a long time now. I can't even remember when we first met. Must have been, well, goodness, 4 or 5 years ago. 5 or 6 years ago. Anyway, he's the man called the fix-it in the real estate industry. He's the one who gets called in to fix the big boys' problems. He is the most intelligent man that I know when it comes to real estate and packaging things together. And he can talk at a individual level of how to turn something into positive cash flow from practically nothing, right through to how to make a 400 lot land subdivision profitable when the big boys can't work it out for themselves. Anyway, without any further ado, I would like to introduce the man himself, Mr. Kevin Dudney. Hey, Kevin.
Hello, Dudney. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
I'm pleased to hear that.
How do you think that went for as an intro?
I would love to live up to that reputation.
Oh, you do every day.
The man I'd like to be.
You think so?
Absolutely.
So tell me, Kevin, you've been in the real estate game for, are we allowed to say how many years?
Oh, you can stab at 40 years if you like.
40 years, and that'd be a fair hit?
That would be.
Okay, so with 40 years in the industry, what's your hot tips for real estate investors now with the state of the market? Where's the money?
Well, Dipno, I believe that we've made some very interesting mistakes in the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last great boom we started was in the 60s with the baby boomers.
Yep.
And they bought their first home and it was about 85 square metres.
Right.
And they bred their family in that until it got too big, so they either extended it or built another one.
Mm-hmm.
But as they grew up, they all built the same thing.
And so we had all of these little houses all in a row all the same.
Yep. 4-bedroom, 2-car accom, lock-up, en-suited homes. And so, therefore, the average price was $450,000 and nobody can afford that.
Right.
Because $450,000 is $672 a week.
Right.
Plus running cost of the house.
Yes.
That's before carbon tax.
Yeah.
And it's going to get too expensive.
Okay, so where's the game now for the young player?
Well, I think something old is new again. All we need to do is look at clever designs that are 85 square metres.
Mm-hmm.
70 square metres, 55 square metres, or even 110 square metres.
We're going to have to re-educate all of these kids that they can't move out of home and then go and live in the same style house that they've just moved out of, because they don't realise that that's the house that their parents have taken probably 30 years to build up to.
That might be true, but there is a way, because we wouldn't allow them to buy the first home their parents bought because they wouldn't understand how to live in a home with one toilet.
Internet connection.
So we do have to give them something. So let's not put them back in the cave. And there's lots of ways we can do that. We can create housing with en suites and some really great Balinese rooms and all sorts of stuff that's cost
efficient. Indoor-outdoor
stuff. Exactly. We've created new architecture I saw last week where the whole outside wall just opened up seamlessly to the outside. And it was just a beautiful barn-like experience 1 minute and then cosy and shut down the next.
Very good.
Flicking a switch.
And you still work out how to keep the mosquitoes out?
Yep. You need one more track on the bottom, so
right.
You can run the screen across. How you doing?
So give me a little bit about your background for all of my listeners, and then we'll get on to a little more about how they can start to turn around their normal thinking about real estate into something a little bit more proactive and positive cash flow. What's your background?
Well, my background is I started in land marketing in Western Australia, in a place called Whitfords and Padbury's in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and quickly moved to Queensland, my hometown, and spent 31 years with LJ Hooker, and I built up a team of 105 selling staff.
Right.
And over that time, we then created a specialist division called land marketing.
Right.
And I've been with that world for the last 20 years, but because I was the last one into that industry, I only got the jobs that nobody else wanted. and so I was the last one in.
Right.
So I accidentally became a specialist in things that didn't work.
Now, I remember the days when the big boys sent you across to America to go and do a complete study on trends and things and bring all those concepts back here.
And we did.
And you wrote a book.
And we did. We wrote a book on it and built a house in an aircraft hangar because we weren't allowed to build it anywhere in Australia because it was illegal. And after we built it, the Current Affair got hold of it and it crashed their website. And as a result of that, 1,000 homes have now been built across Australia.
Of that design?
Of that design, or its grandchildren.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, we'll come back to that one and how people can start to do the same thing without crashing your website.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in land marketing. Now, you must see a lot of estates around the place and the way they're put together. How does the average investor really get in and make money out of buying a block of land and building something new on it? Because don't the two just kind of add up to the value?
No.
Right.
So let's take a case in point. I'm sitting on your veranda and we're currently in a geographical location called the Sunshine Coast.
Absolutely.
Right. So just around the corner, there's an estate that we'll call Forest Pines.
Right. That's just hypothetically, of course. Hypothetically. Yes, right. Yeah, right.
Now, their land has gone up to about $260,000 a block.
Right.
And you build another four-bedroom home on it, and that's going to cost you another $240,000.
Mm-hmm.
So before you can look around, you're right up there in the late fours for a home that returns $450 a week.
Which is negative.
Right.
And you guys, if you haven't listened to my podcast on why I hate negative gearing, please go and do so now. Because that's the last thing you want to do, because it's legalized poverty. It will keep you trapped in poverty forevermore. So you can forget all those kinds of investment strategies right now. And Kevin's got a solution for you.
Or if you like my version of that, just take a $50 note and keep tearing it in half. Because that's the same thing. So
yours is far more humorous. I beat everybody about the ears.
I understand.
I've got a big stick.
It's like taking a $20 note and cutting it in half and expecting that to work. It just doesn't work. So to overcome this whole problem, this stupid fallacy of negative gearing, which is we'll show you how to lose money and then save tax on it.
Yes.
Let's instead figure out how to make it positive.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we did this on this fictitious place called Forest Pines at the Sunshine Coast is we bought a block of land off the developer and went to the council and asked permission to be able to cut that block in half. And they said, you can as long as you call it a duplex. But in the last year, under a new code called the Sustainability Code, we can now build duplexes unconnected or freestanding.
Right, so we've got a freestanding duplex.
Exactly.
Right.
So that means there's now a fence between the two, so they look like individual houses.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've done is that block of land that originally cost, say, $280,000
mm-hmm.
in this case, we gave the council another $20,000 or so to call it $300,000
yep.
to give them more fees because
yep.
they wanted that.
Yes, they tend
we
to do that.
We then cut it in half and it then owed us $150,000.
Yes.
We built a smaller home on there, around 160 square metres, that was under $200,000 to build, plus the $150,000 means that it cost us then around that $330,000 mark to create that outcome. Whereas everything else was much, much dearer, and it rented for the same money.
So $330,000, and what would it value at the end?
The valuation on that one came in at $430,000.
So you made $100,000 by building it.
Yep.
And you got two, basically, so you built two.
Yep.
Each of them up $100,000 on what everything else...
Anywhere from 80 to 100, depending on the value.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it rents for, how much did you say?
$450,000,
okay. So that's about neutrally cash flowed. But if we were to sell one, take $100,000, pay off our debt on... pay that $100,000 debt off the one that we're keeping,
yeah.
it would probably, just in rough figures, bring in about $8,000 to $10,000 passive income.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
You got it.
I like those ones.
So the real secret is, so instead of taking one block, how do we take that to a higher use and then halve the cost of it by cutting it in half?
And be efficient in the build.
Absolutely, because we don't want to build another four-bedroom home on a smaller block.
No.
We have no shortage of those. And in fact, more recently, I'm now building two bedrooms and one bedroom as a duplex.
Yep.
Because it's under 200 square metres in total, and therefore I can sell the two-bedroom one for, say, $320,000.
Yep.
And then the other one only owes me $180,000.
Yeah. And it'll still rent up in the...
For $250,000 to $300,000.
That's right.
Depending on where you are. And again, in the Sunshine Coast, that would be about $280,000 a week for that.
So nicely, positively cash flowed. Let's talk about your concepts on design, because you have, I mean, you know, you're the master at this when it comes to design and not having wasted space. This one that you built in the hangar, one of the big things was let's not have any wasted space. Mm-hmm. Let's utilise every little bit of it.
That's right.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, the three big killers of a home in terms of cost are, number one on the list, 15% of a house's hallways and directional areas to get from room A to room B.
Yep.
So let's remove those.
Right, so no hallways.
Right. Secondly, dinosaur rooms are rooms where, if they're not used for more than 15% of the time, why do you have them? We'll call them formal lounges, formal dining rooms. So if we can get rid of those and make them transformer rooms so that they can transform back to that, but when they're not that, they could be something else.
Now, that's an interesting concept. What else could they be? So, I mean, they're a formal dining. What do you turn that into when it's not a formal dining?
That's not hard, depending on how you've designed the space. If you've designed the space right and it's near your external wall, mm-hmm. you can have it so that that wall opens up and then becomes part of an al fresco area that connects to it.
Okay.
So it becomes part of your outdoor room.
Okay, yep.
That then disappears as a dining room because the table simply isn't there. It can come up out of the floor, it can drop from somewhere else.
Ah, very clever. Okay.
As an example, a media room. If you put a double bed into the wall and it's hidden seamlessly in the media room,
yep.
then your guests have got guest the bedroom. Best room in the house.
Absolutely the best room.
Television and it's next to the kitchen and they can eat your food, watch your movies and stay
very
a
good.
While.
Stay a while. You sure you want that?
Well, I don't, but they do.
Okie doke. So we get rid of the wasted space rooms. I mean, even laundries these days, you know, they can pretty much be a cupboard. If you're trying to be as economical as you possibly can with the most rent for the lowest building cost, which is really what we're looking at, and value, laundries are the biggest waste of space there are.
Well, that's because we've got a memory of what a laundry used to be. We used to have a laundry as a place where you ironed your things.
Irons these
right.
days.
But if you do, most people these days would sooner iron in front of their television and bring the iron in because it's more transportable these days.
That's true too.
So mm-hmm. because of what we've learned, we still have the same space in a laundry, but we don't use it the way we used to use it.
True.
So the trick there is just to have enough space to make it a utility room
yep.
capable of washing and drying and mm-hmm. then get in, get out.
True.
And so that's you have to think differently.
And this concept of the indoor, outdoor, I mean, you know, it's something that has always been a Queensland thing. However, it's something that now really is an Australian thing. And whether you open it up during the day or whatever, I mean, just having that ability to be able to see the outside inside is definitely the way to go right across Australia. I mean, that's a big, big trend.
It is. I mean, we stole the two-storey from Victoria, and it doesn't work in Queensland. It's too hot at night because mm-hmm. it's been locked up all day, mm-hmm. and yet 90% of our two-storey homes in Queensland are bedrooms on top.
Yeah.
Whereas, in actual fact, the first homes we built were the other way around. Upstairs was lounge, dining, kitchen.
Yes.
And bedrooms maybe on the same level as a low set on stilts.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was a two-storey, it was your lounge, dining on top with the bedrooms down below.
Right.
Because that's how we built.
Okay, so cost-wise then, you've got rid of all of these extra rooms, which means your building can be smaller now, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously, that directly relates to cost per square metre and a lower end product. Externally, I mean, you've been using a lot of innovative products and things like that to lower the cost because, you know, your standard brick and tile, which is, you know, still okay, there's a lot of other building materials now that have really come down in price and they're far more energy sustainable or energy efficient than perhaps our normal traditional building products.
Yes. The enemy of that, though, is that in a $450,000 house and land package in Australia, there's still about $120,000 in tax that comes into play because of all the various taxes that are on GST and the taxes on land and the taxes on stamp duties, and this gets fairly high.
Fabulous. All that stuff we were supposed to get rid of when GST was introduced.
God.
Yeah, which didn't happen.
So
we haven't got a GST on bread and milk. That was the trade-off.
Yeah.
Aren't we lucky?
Yeah. And circuses.
On circuses.
Yeah, we haven't taxed that yet.
But if you put sultanas in the bread, then it is taxed.
But the Romans were the same. Bread and circuses weren't taxed. So we haven't learned that much since.
Oh, good.
So that's where it came from.
Okay.
The Romans got it right. But they taxed everything else. But in terms of housing costs, about 30% of the cost of a whole house is the products.
Uh-huh.
So when you talk about reducing a house cost, you can really only drop it down about 10% with clever use of product. Because labour costs can
yes.
be reduced by using factory outcomes. And we're working a little smarter in terms of larger panels that we put up quicker.
Yes,
so these days
freestanding things.
Yeah, we can put up a house in 7 days instead of 7 weeks or currently 26 weeks using standard method of construction.
And what about the levels of finishes and things like that? Because, you know, you've got to build to the area and the, you've got your basic, your standard and your luxury finishes.
Yeah.
And you know, depending on where you're building, because I build quite a bit in regional areas and things like that, and, you know, there's no point in having luxury finishes because there's just no value in them. They're not appreciated. It's not something that you look for, and there's no point in it at all. Whereas, you know, in other areas, that's immediately you've got to have the luxury finishes, otherwise it doesn't value at all.
Yeah.
So, with your new conceptual designs, where do you base that?
If we're going into really difficult regional areas, we tend to use a more concrete material because the tenancy aggression on the house is a bit harsh out there in the regional areas, so you need to have products that actually don't break easily. So you need to be selective.
You're not from the bush, are you?
No.
I am.
Well, sometimes they're a bit harsh out there in the regional areas.
Oh, right.
On their housing. So
it's the weather.
It's the weather.
Yes.
Absolutely. Got nothing to do with anything else.
No, it's not.
So you can use lightweight materials such as composite concrete material that's still lightweight, mm-hmm. that come in large panels, and that reduces your cost by up to 10%.
Okay. Well, that's considerable, though.
It is.
You know, a $200,000 house, that's 20 grand.
Exactly.
And, you know, the interest on the 20 grand, that you can get a lesser rent and still be positively cash flowed at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, okay, so materials, finishes are the things you've got to think about. Design, obviously, design becomes very, very important. But the big saving when you're doing these new builds is really trying to get 2-on-1.
Absolutely. Or 3-on-1.
Or 3-on-1 or 4-on-1 or whatever you can do.
Whatever the highest use is, yeah.
Yeah. And land, square meterages and things, you're able to achieve this on quite small land lots. Obviously, it's determined by council.
Yes.
But just go through some of the areas that you've done this sort of thing on and the land lot size that you're looking at.
Well, different rules for different people, but there's a group called the ULDA, which is a fairly new group in Queensland, mm-hmm. government-based, that has approved subdivisions in Gladstone and other locations. They can build up to 30 things on a hectare.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the development industry, or 90% of it, is building 15 to the hectare.
Right.
So ULDA is unique in the sense that it can go to 30 to the hectare. Mm-hmm. So as an example, on 2,000 square metres on a ULDA estate, I might be able to build 20 things.
Right.
On a private estate, I might only be able to build 4 things on that.
Okay.
So,
and how do you determine the difference? Like, where is that listed? Where can you find them? Besides, you know, ring you up and say, Kevin, tell me, what are we looking for?
Well, if you want to do your base research on ULDA, it would be ulda.com.
Yes.
And you'd find them there. And all of their actual data is on there as to what they will allow to be built. Or you can contact someone like yourself and find out where those addresses are. So that's one way around it.
So you consult to a lot of these government bodies or have done in the past.
Yeah.
You consult to all of the majors when it comes to big land subdivisions and things like that.
Yeah.
How are you finding things at the moment?
I guess I describe it when I get to meet them for the first time as a perfect storm. Anything that could go wrong has.
Right.
They are consistently building products that worked 10 years ago that nobody would look twice at today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like selling CD players to a bunch of people that are looking for an iPhone. and that's how I would describe it.
Okay.
We're trying to sell the wrong thing to the right people.
The wrong thing to the right people, okay. Because, I mean, you are the fix-it man. You get called in when somebody's in trouble, the estate's in trouble, this isn't working, that isn't working, and they go, Kevin, how do I fix this? And you completely redesign, remodel the whole estate, etc.
Yeah.
For investors, now, you sell land.
Yes.
Yes? So if someone wanted to come to you and, you know, and buy a piece of land,
mm-hmm.
If they're one of my investors as opposed to the, you know, flocks of people out there that just want negative gearing,
sure.
What can you do for them?
First thing I'd say is tell me about your block of land. How big is it? Where is it? What are the
rules? No, they're going to want one from you.
Okay. Well, if they ask me where to buy a block of land, I would then say to them, this is where I would do it because of these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in a mining area, I look at more than one reason for that place to be there.
Yep.
So if it's mining, what else is there after that?
Mm-hmm.
Such as education, how big is the city?
Hospitals.
How long has it been there before then? How long will it be there after then?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more of a fan of, say, Rockhampton than I was of Gladstone.
Yep.
Because Gladstone doesn't have a city.
Mm-hmm.
Rockhampton has a city.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big difference there.
Yep.
It's you can fly into Rockhampton for $79, but Gladstone's $300.
It is at the moment.
So your problem is you've got to look at all of these factors when you want to get there and get out of there.
Yep.
Because
okay.
we all commute in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at all of those bigger factors before I start looking at the smaller picture. And then I look at the market and the real estate agents in, say, Rockhampton. 96% of all sales in Rockhampton are established real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at what's left, which is 0.4%, and that's my market, land.
Yes.
And then I then look at what can I build that is nothing like what they're selling.
Okay.
So as long as it's nothing like what they have on the market,
mm-hmm.
nothing like they're offering for sale,
yep.
then I know we're going to make money.
Which is the total reverse of what most people think, that they have to go and build exactly what everybody else is building.
Which is why they negatively gear.
That's right. Which is why they then become my students and go, how do I get out of this?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going broke investing in property.
Oh, and it gets worse. I mean, if they buy an investment, it's usually from some show that they went to with some marketing organisation that ends up selling it for valuation, and we've created it for up to $80,000 less.
That's right. And they can do the same thing.
Without paying the 80.
Yeah. And so instead of paying retail, they're paying wholesale by getting in, understanding the process, and then being able to take these, I won't call them shortcuts, but, you know, cost savings along the way to be able to end up with the 80 grand or 100 grand back in their pocket, as opposed to a marketer who, you know, picks up somewhere between 40 and 80 grand just for coming along.
Yeah, thanks very much.
For making a phone call, a cold call.
You got it. And I think the shortcut, and there are shortcuts, is we say to them, well, here's the 30 we built for the marketers. Have a look at those.
Yes.
Here's the figures that these people pay.
Yes.
And here's how you can avoid that.
Okay, now that's the biggie, how you can really get in there and start to buy at the lower cost. If we can get in there and start to buy, not only without the marketeer's profit in there, so that's the first saving. Now let's say the saving on that is 40 grand, give us a figure.
Sure.
Okay, and then by the time we go through some smart analysis and don't just buy one, but we buy one big enough to split into two, our saving on that is likely to be probably 40 aside.
Yep.
Okay, so we're up to $120,000 savings there.
Yeah, potentially. Whether you'd make that, I know you'd do 80.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's call it 80 then at this point. 20 aside, which is
sure.
on the conservative side, I think, but let's leave it at that. So we're up to 80 in front of everybody else in the market at that time.
Yes.
Okay. And then if we get a little bit efficient in the building process, cut out all the wasted space, have dual use of livable areas and those sort of things, have some efficient materials, and, you know, really be smart about that process,
yes.
we might even pick up another $20,000-$30,000 maybe. Certainly 20.
Yeah, and I think on the idea of clever design, we got called in to fix a problem last year in a place called Red Bank Plains.
Yes.
Now, Red Bank Plains sold way too many rental accommodations. It
right.
was oversupplied. There was about 3 years' supply of rentals.
Mm.
And we came in and built 76 more rentals at a time when even the mortgage insurers wouldn't insure there.
Right.
It was that bad. So
why did you build 76 more?
Because the client had 76 blocks that they had to sell. So the decision was that if we built something that was smarter, more architecturally significant, and cheaper to build,
mm-hmm.
but looked nicer with decks and open plans and no dinosaur rooms, would the tenants in the other low-set brick dongers move out of those instantly in favour of moving to ours?
Right.
Guess what?
They did.
Within a week.
Within a week?
Within a week. So 76 homes were rented in a place where there was 3 years oversupply,
yeah.
and we moved them from their homes instantly into these for the same money, because a tenant is very happy to be in a pretty house as they are an ugly one.
That's true.
So,
especially with the same money.
Yeah, for the same money. So why not give them something significant in your architecture that says, hey, I'm a nicer home to live in, because it guarantees you a longer-term tenant and higher rental returns over time.
That's right.
So think about that.
And then if we can get a couple of rentals per side, so we might be able to have a one-bedroom and a two-bedroom, that little mini units, if you like, if we can call what we'll build what we call a dual occupancy,
yes.
well, our rents are probably 30% higher again.
even more, because a four-bedroom home in, say, a place like Byron Bay would rent for, let's call it, $450 a week.
Yeah.
But a two-bedroom home in Byron Bay still rents for $350 a week, and a one-bedroom still rents for $275 a week. So if you add up $350 and $275, and that home collectively is only 200 square metres for both, and the other one was 250 square metres for one.
Yeah.
So we can get you as high as $700 a week or $650 a week.
In Byron Bay.
In Byron Bay. They're paying $180 just for a room.
Yeah.
Plus outgoings in Byron Bay.
And the other thing is, you know, throughout New South Wales with their great laws they've got down there, which you promised me earlier this morning, I'm going to hold you to this, that you're going to have the state government up here change it so that we're the same as New South Wales so that we can have all the granny flats we want.
Yeah, because the problem is that if you build a granny flat accommodation in Queensland, you need a statutory declaration that granny's living there. But in New South Wales, just over the Tweed Heads border, you can rent it to anybody but granny.
Yes.
And you can rent that through a real estate agent and have it externally marketed, and you're free to do it as many times as you like.
There is a little bit of a thing, I guess, leeway in Queensland where you can rent it to one tenant.
Yes.
But if they have, you know, somebody else living in the back room or whatever else, you can have a little bit higher rent, but certainly not as good as New South Wales.
No, so...
New South Wales is the leader in this force.
In that, yes, unquestionably.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can do affordable housing because of that flexibility. In Queensland, as a real-time example, in Rockhampton, we built a three-bedroom on one corner and a two on the other, and the council made us have a door that had to be opened. And what we had to then do was rent that to a mining company who in turn then rented that to two separate groups.
Yeah, and locked the door.
And locked the door, and that got us $700 a week instead of the usual $410.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden for the near same cost of building, and I say near same cost because we have to add another kitchen and another bathroom, and these are expensive things to add in.
Sure.
So it costs more. But the end result...
is much, much better.
Much, much better. And we can furnish a whole home right down to the toothbrush holder these days for $15,000 to $17,000.
Yeah.
And that suddenly rents for another $150 a week.
Because it's rent. Because it's furnished.
Yeah. And so we were taught in the old days never rent a furnished house because they've got nothing and they'll trash your stuff.
No.
But the return on $15,000 worth of furniture...
You can afford to go and buy another lot every 5 years anyway.
Exactly. And it's amazing. And you're getting an extra...
And great depreciation.
Yeah, $5,000 a year and you write it off.
That's true.
That's a negative gearing you can handle.
That's true, because it's a tax deduction for not spending any money.
Got it.
Tell me about this house you built in the hangar.
Well, I took a year off and went overseas and did a study tour that you alluded to earlier in America. And while I was on the bus, I kept going to Europe and all the other places in the known world. And I noticed that we're the only country left that are building bigger homes. Everybody else is building 1:20 square metres per head, 1:30 square metres a head, and we're building 1:80 square metres a head.
Goodness me.
So we're building 250 square metres for three people. In overseas areas, they're building for three people anywhere from 60 square metres to 100 square metres, maybe 120 max. Then that's 1:40. We're double that.
Yep.
And I accept that the general argument in Queensland is, oh, it's cheaper to build a bigger house, and it is, but a $450,000 debt is $1.2 million to pay back when you take the interest, and it's $672 a week.
Yeah.
So if we can figure out how to build a smarter, smaller home, I then came back with that idea.
Right.
That's what we called smarter, smaller home. And I went to the government, said, look what I can build, and they said it's illegal.
Why did they say it was illegal?
Because the small lot codes that all councils write once every 4 or 5 years is immediately out of date the second they deliver it.
Yes.
So when I come up with a house design, they say this bullet doesn't fit my gun.
Right.
So therefore, you can't build that. It's against the small lot code.
Against the small lot code because it was too big or too small or too what?
The small lot code
took up too much of the...
The small lot code at that time had an argument about how much space you might be able to cover on the block.
So the footprint on the block.
Yeah, or it might have some argument about how many car accommodations you needed and where they should be.
All right.
And whether they should be lock up or not.
Okay.
And so forth and so on. Whereas the smarter, smaller home was designed to have the car accom in the back, not the front, so I could create a better architecture. So in speeding that story up, I went to the developers and they said, well, we won't build it because it's below our covenant, because the average covenant size was mine's bigger than yours and 180 square metres was the minimum. My smarter home was 120 square metres.
Uh-huh.
And that's a two-storey, three-bedroom, walk-in robe, walk-in ensuite with three toilets.
Right.
And beautiful areas that opened up to outside decks, all in 120 square metres.
Mm-hmm.
And the footprint on the land was only 60 square metres.
Mm-hmm.
60, 120.
Okay, yeah.
So it wasn't big. So it looked great on a 300 square metre lot with a really huge backyard. And so we built it an aircraft hangar.
As you do.
As you do. Because it's the only place that I thought no one could tell me what to do until I met the workplace health and safety people and a whole bunch of other people.
They said you can't build a house inside a hangar.
Yeah. So after 6 months of realising that people can tell you what to do, we still did it. We just didn't tell them.
Goodness.
And then a current
aircraft. Is it still in the hangar?
Yeah, it's still there. You can see it today.
Goodness me.
In fact, they've just completely reclad it with new product so that it's got a fresh start.
Okay.
And so since we did that, the West Australian government thought that because we built it in a hangar, it was a factory-built home.
Right.
That's what they thought.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Right.
So then we had to rebuild it in a factory so that they could take them to Karratha and build hundreds of them in the mining communities. Because as luck would have it, it was built on a 3.5-metre grid system, which meant the whole house sat perfectly on a truck.
Good.
And it had no wastage. There was nothing thrown in the...
You still got to have a pilot. As in a car pilot.
No, because it sat on a 3.5-metre width. So that was the allowed width of the panels to go on the truck, or so they tell me.
So you cut it in half?
Yeah.
Okay. So two bits and then two bits on top?
Yeah.
Right. So four trucks.
Got it.
Excellent. Okay.
So then they trucked it away to Karratha,
mm-hmm.
and the West Australian government loved it because they thought it was a factory-built home.
But Queensland still didn't like it.
No. So,
but now New South Wales loves you.
They love it.
Yes, yeah, right.
Victoria loved it. And
so we're putting some pressure on up here.
Papua New Guinea now love it.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. And Queensland's starting to love it. And we've sold over 1,000 of them.
Good-o. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's
smaller, smarter homes?
If you went to a website, it would be www.smartersmallhome.com.au.
I always get it round the other way. Smarter comes first.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's a smart thing to do.
And the other one is where we post all sorts of crazy ideas is the www.futurehousingtaskforce.com.au.
Okay, so we just say those websites again. It's www.smartersmallhome.com. And the other one is
www.futurehousingtaskforce.com.
Okay, so go and have a look at those two websites and check out some of the new and the good stuff in the new trends.
The new stuff.
New stuff. Go and have a look at the new stuff in the industry at the moment. And how can we get a hold of some of these blocks that we don't have to pay for, other than $1,000? You don't be frowning at me now. I haven't finished my sentence.
Then I don't need to come up with an answer then.
That we don't have to pay for unless they'll split them for us and give us two for one.
Okay. So the question is, how can I buy a block of land without paying for it until I know what it's going to be? We have to take a block of land that the developer erroneously thought was ideal as a single building block, and we want to make it two blocks. So we would sign up that customer subject to us getting permission from the council,
mm-hmm.
in no more than 90 days,
right,
and no less than 90 days, subject to an extension if necessary,
mm-hmm.
and they would not pay anything other than $1,000 deposit, which mm-hmm. is refundable,
yep.
Unless they could get that approval.
So then we get our two-for-one deal.
Yep.
We've got our cost saving on that. We've got our cost saving because there's no marketers and everybody else in the middle, which we don't like.
Yep.
And then we could go and build the smarter, smaller homes.
Or grandchildren of those.
Or grandchildren thereof.
Yes.
And get a good 30, 40% more in rent.
Yes, or sell one.
Sell one.
And reduce your debt.
Pay down debt, yep. Keep the other.
Got it.
Mm. So good model.
So therefore what you do is do that and then do it again.
And do it again.
Yeah.
So realistically, just think of a couple who, you know, they might have had some sins of the past, let's say, where they've gone down the negative gearing road. And
so they're normal.
They realise how hard it is and some mistakes that they've made. They may well need to sell out of some rubbish that they've accumulated in order to be able to move forward. Now, that hurts. You know, it's like selling the trophy car, if you like. So we have to get rid of the attachment to those sort of things. But once they've cleaned their slate and ready to go again, and they did it this way, which is a much smarter way, you know, there's lots of other ways you can do things, but this is a good way to do it, then... realistically, how many could they do in a year? if this was their model, brand new homes, get a split, sell one, keep one, positive cash flow.
In the first year, I would advise them to do no more than two.
Yep.
In the second year, no more than probably two again. And in the third year, no more than double that. So then they could do four. And then they could do eight.
Okay.
And the reason I keep them at two and two is I want them to experience the value,
mm-hmm.
the sale process, mm-hmm. the time it took.
Mm-hmm.
Any more than two in a year would just be too hard on them and everyone else, because you've got to find the block, lose 3 months in getting the zoning, get the thing built, you've
yep.
torn up 6 months there.
That's true.
And then you've got to get it sold and then do another one. Mm. And I don't want to have the pressure of one going while one's finishing.
Yeah.
I want them to finish one before they do another one.
You know, it's funny when you talk to people that have never experienced a positive cash flow property before.
Mm.
I had a guy come here the other day. He was delivering chairs. And, you know, he was chatting to me about it. He'd gone off to the mines because his business wasn't doing so well, and he just wanted a job where he could not have to
yeah.
bring his work home with him, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was, you know, he wanted to retire. And I said, you know, if you had your ideal day, what would you do? He said, I'd play golf. I said, well, can you play golf 7 days a week? He said, well, probably not, but that'd be a really good day. I said, okay. So I said, how much money do you need passive income to play golf? And he said, oh, I don't know. I've never thought about it. So the first question you've got to think about is to what you need to put yourself in that scenario. Now, he had a reasonable amount of equity, a couple of negative properties, I might add, that he might have had to get rid of. But he was in a position, you know, when I looked at his position, to go out there, have strategic investments, and I would say within 1 to 2 years, he would have totally replaced his income and be able to play as much golf as he wanted pretty much anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But he couldn't see it. He couldn't feel it because he had never experienced buying something that actually put more money back in your pocket every week than it costs you. You know, the whole idea of it and the concept of it was so foreign to him, he immediately dismissed as, oh, it doesn't exist, which is wrong. It's just he wasn't educated enough to know what to look for, how to do it, you know, what his strategy was going to be and those sorts of things, which, you know, is obviously where I've got years of experience in that. But he just couldn't feel it. Like he couldn't conceptualize the fact that you could buy something that put more money in your pocket every week. And he just couldn't get his head around it.
I was making notes.
What were you making notes about?
What I was doing then while you were mentioning that was, I was working out that if a $450,000 loan, which is a normal house and land price,
yep.
is $670 a week or $2,680 a month,
hmm.
and you looked at it from the way you were looking at it,
yep.
then if we built that as a three-bedroom on one side and a two on the other,
mm-hmm.
you could rent one side out at $350 a week, and that would take $1,300 a month off your debt, straight up.
Yeah.
And you still live in a really comfortable home on a block. The person you're renting to is next door, so it's pretty good to keep an eye on them. And all of a sudden you've got income straight up.
That's right.
And that's
and a young person can do that.
Absolutely.
First starting out.
Absolutely.
I mean that's the thing to do because they don't need a big space. And but if they can get the loan to go and build two, well they've immediately got rent from the other one. And if they're prepared to share a few rooms and rent out a couple of other rooms, well so be it.
Well, what fascinates me is
they put money in their pocket.
Well, if you look at a sub penthouse today in a high-rise apartment block,
yeah.
a sub penthouse is 130 square metres.
Yeah.
But we ask our kids to buy a minimum size today at 230 square metres as a house,
mm.
first up.
Yeah.
That is beyond a penthouse.
You know, it's true.
Straight up.
Yeah.
So when they look at units, they understand how the space is used smarter.
Yeah.
So what I did was I looked at all the best designs of high-rise apartments, because they cost so much to build when you get up to 40 levels,
yeah.
that you look at how they use space.
Yeah.
Then you bring that down to a low-rise solution,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a great floor plan.
True.
And,
that's
and
very
then
true.
Once you think that way, you get some clever ideas. So if you want to design the perfect house, don't look at houses, look at high-rise apartments. Look at the way they use space, look at the way they design them, the colours, the
yeah.
flavours, and then use that palette of knowledge to create a low-rise solution, and you're on a roll.
Except they don't have to do that because they can just copy you.
They could. Because we've got lots of Vietnamese looking at stuff.
That's right. Okay, Kevin, well, how can people get hold of you? They want their little splitter block or whatever else you got on offer at the moment?
Well, they can track me down a number of ways. They could call my own personal website, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
That's K-D-O-O-D-N-E-Y, K-Dudney, at bigpond.com. Or they could Google LJ Hooker Land Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could use those other websites we spoke about
yep.
earlier.
Okay.
So they can track me because I've got a really unusual name.
Mm-hmm.
So if they just Google me.
Very, very good.
They will find me.
Now, I'm actually stealing some of your time in June as well.
So I hear.
And I've got some mega conferences coming up. In fact, I've got one in Sydney, one in Melbourne and one in Brisbane. And they're the I Love Real Estate Super Conference that we're having. And everybody's invited. Anyone who's, you know, been listening to my podcast and all the cards and emails and stuff I've been receiving about it have been fabulous. Everybody's invited to come along to iloverealestate.tv, and you're going to be there in person and give us your pearls of wisdom.
I am, and that's all because I sat on your veranda and you checked my diary and said you're free on those days.
Yes, I've got you, you're mine.
So I'll see you on those events.
Very, very good.
Look forward to it.
Okay, guys, well, that's it for today. I can't tie up too much of his time, even though sitting here on the veranda is pretty beautiful. Thank you guys for listening, and jump on the website, iloverealestate.tv. Have a look at the dates for the super conference that are coming up, and make sure you go and introduce yourself to Kevin on the days, because he'll be very happy to talk to you all and show you how to really make some money in real estate.
Thank you, Deb.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for coming along.
Anytime.